Well, we've got about, what, six more classes? I'm kind of looking forward to the last class. But really, I've enjoyed the study. I don't think we can put too much time on the things that we find in the Bible. And I've tried in this class to cover things, maybe bringing out things that we overlook sometimes, and I want to particularly talk to the young people here. When we look at what God has done, and you start all the way where we did, back with the ark coming across the flood, and the experience that people had at Babel. And one thing that has impressed me in this study, and I'm going to shut up just a minute and get on the subject, but the thing that really stands out in here is how easy it is for God to make changes among us, and we don't even realize it's happening. And I think that's what we've seen time and time again as we've come through this course. God can cause things to happen using nothing in the world but natural things. God doesn't have to create a miracle every time He wants to redirect the people. It's very easy for Him. And maybe if we looked at it another way, we would say that God creates miracles or performs miracles around us all the time. And we don't recognize it. This morning I want to talk more about it. It's kind of an overall, but really it's not. I want to talk about the things that took place that both caused the division in God's people and the consequences of it. Because the consequences of what happened during Solomon's reign, the consequences would maybe make us stop and think about ourselves. Because God caused some things to happen there that determined the future of mankind. And we see in these things, we can see that God is taking things down the path that He had in mind before He ever created one of us. And if we can just get that out of today's lesson, I feel like we will have done something like what we should have done. I want to start, and I'm going to work with my back to you probably most of the time this morning. I want to start with this view graph, which you've seen before. But there are certain things I want to point out on it that maybe we didn't get as we went through it the first time. You know our signature. I hope that's implanted in your minds, and every time you look at a map, when you see that, it's like looking at a map of downtown Athens. We know where we are. And we know if we consider it, the things that have happened along this and all the borders on the east side, and thankfully, I guess, on the west side, it's all water. God put His people in an ideal place to accomplish what he wanted accomplished. He wanted a people that would follow him and do his will of their own volition. Not because they were forced into it. And God wanted people to have influence on other people, not for bad, for good. And when we look at some of the commands that God gave to his people as he brought them into this land, and I'm going to kind of walk you through that part of it. Abraham, when he came into this land, was back up somewhere up there. And he came down a highway that already existed right down through here. And at about this point, he went down this riverbed, crossed over at a ford and up a wadi, and came to Shechem. Shechem, Shechem, whatever you want to call it. From there, a lot of things have happened. It was almost like that place was the focal point for God's entry into this land. And you can see he's got marked off Canaan, and over here is Ammon, and down here is Moab, between this Arnon River, which goes into the Dead Sea, and the Zered River brook goes into the bottom. But all of this was a place that God wanted his people to be. Another thing that God wanted to accomplish in this, he wanted them, as they went into this land, to drive these people out. He didn't want them in there. He didn't want these people in there, but this was a different problem for him. He didn't want these people in there. They did things that God didn't like. And one of the main things that seems to have been the most repulsive thing in the world to God was the fact that people, left to their own devices, would come up with all kinds of gods to follow. I guess we don't do that too much, do we? I think that's one of our problems. We don't realize what we're doing sometimes. And I'm not talking to you in a condemning voice, I hope. Talking to all of us. We need to be careful when we worship God, when we serve God. We need to be careful that we do what he wants, not what we think he wants. He's told us what he wants. And in no uncertain terms, we can look through these stories that we've been going over and see what made God angry and what he wanted done about it. One of the things that God told those people when they went into the land, coming in right along here at the head of the Dead Sea, a little place called Gilgal, and then their first conquest was Jericho, which is just a few feet up above them and to the side. God wanted these people to go in there. And as they conquered the land, he wanted them to fill it with people that did what he wanted done. And people even look at God and say, well, God's selfish. They say God is not fair. Why would he tell the people in going into this land, why would he give them a command to run all of these people out or destroy them? And we think about it, well, God wouldn't kill a child. If he's going to die, that's the best time in his life to do it. if you stop and think about it from God's viewpoint, that soul is innocent. There are whole religions out there that teach that a child, when he is born, is guilty of all of the sins of his father. But you know, the Bible does not teach that. But the story that we're looking at here now is a case where we see a man who had, well, I can't think of an advantage that Solomon wasn't given. He was given a good mind, he was given wisdom, he was given riches. He was, and a promise that if he would obey God and keep his commandments, his son would sit on that throne forever. And God could do that because he already had in mind a plan for his own son to come to the earth, to live a life that would bring him up to the point where he's ready to take leadership, and then prepare some men to go forward after him, and a mechanism to let them know what needs to be taught. He gave him that. That was Solomon's. But God found later that Solomon just, he didn't measure up. Solomon, his wisdom got him in trouble. His riches got him in trouble. And his, how am I going to say this without getting myself embarrassed? He had woman trouble. He loved them. 700 wives and 300 concubines. I did some math on that the other day, and there had to be a wedding ceremony of some kind every 2 weeks for 40 years. That was part of Solomon's, what did I say, everyday appointment book. I'd hate to have been his personal secretary. I wouldn't have known what in the world to do next or why or where. But just the wedding ceremonies that he went through, whatever it was, it may just be, come on, woman, you're my wife now. I don't know what it was. But every 2 weeks for 40 years would have been taken up to perform that service. He not only did that, but he did that picking women in most cases from these people that God has said, move them out or destroy them. They didn't do what God wanted to do. And the main thing we see in them, I'll say, they all worshiped some kind of a god that had been the figment of their imagination. And God says, I will not tolerate that. And he told Solomon near the end of his reign, he said, I am wresting the kingdom from you. Not going to be your kingdom that goes forward. It's going to be David's. Because David did what I wanted him to do. This microphone bothers me. Well, anyway, God warned Solomon no less than 3 times. If you will just keep my commandments. And if we, as we go through the scriptures on this thing, the complaint every time was, you're not following my commandments. Makes you think that his commandments are in some way special to him, doesn't it? Does me? I can't read this story. I can't study it. I can't do anything with it without coming away with the idea that God is serious about this. And if we want to stay on the good side of God, we better accept it as something that's serious to God. I don't mean to be fussing, but this whole class from start to finish has been putting God out there as knowing what he wants of us and knowing what we do, and is perfectly capable of comparing them on a real-time basis. That's hard for us to imagine. But anyway, we started with Abraham coming across at Shechem. We saw where Shechem is. And this is the place where Abraham and Lot made their decision to separate. There are the one here at Ai, which is just a little bit over here, down this way. But Abraham and Lot parted ways there. And later on, we're going to see Jacob, when he's running from his brother Esau, he's going to be spending the night there and having an encounter with God as well. But the point I want to make is we're looking at a people that God has basically babysat for almost 4,000 years now. 2,000 back to them and another on the other side of them. But God has, in this whole period, when he took Jacob and his family and installed them in Egypt, there was a reason for that. And if we look at the difference in the cultures, we'll find that the reason was what God was looking for. He wanted a people in a position where they would develop, reproduce, a people who didn't partake of these outside interferences. The Egyptians hated shepherds. And when Jacob and his family went in, they identified themselves as shepherds. And that's what they really were. They lived off the land and they lived from the produce of the land. And God wanted a special people. And we go all through the Old Testament and we see the things that God has done to keep a fragment of this people still alive and functioning. Not a lot. Because like in the case of Solomon, he found umpteen ways of not doing what God wanted. He was a sharp man. He was a rich man. He was a lusting man. I don't see that we can do much more in defining Solomon than that right there. But let's go to the next view I have. I want to back up even further and say that here we're looking at where all of this started, and I believe it was right along here. And most of the evidence that I've ever heard of would say that it's right there. Some people want to come up here and put her at that point. The real evidence of where it was leads me to believe that this is the place where Abraham started out. Okay, we've been over this map before, and I'm just using this as a refresher. When they came down this side, they have the Canaanites. They've got the Arabians out here. They've got everything else you can imagine back around here. But the land that God gave them was from this place right here, Zion Geber, up to the river of Egypt and upward to the Euphrates River, right along here. And in Solomon's day, that was the kingdom. It was right down here, down to this point on the Gulf of Aqaba, and then up to here in this little strip right here. We've talked about how small it is. But David secured all of that land by force. He went in with armies and God's approval and God's support and conquered people like the Philistines who would have been right in this area right here, Gaza up to about here. And they were making penetrations over toward Jerusalem up in this area. The Philistines were an aggressive people. They were a strong people, but they were idolaters. And God didn't want them in there. And from this, I hope you'll take away the idea that God is working in all of these places. He's working all time. He's taking care of things that we would probably never even imagine needed to be taken care of. And the story in today's part of it is going to start, well, it's already started, but started here at Shechem and Ai and Bethel and all of this, including Egypt back over here, Syria above them, the Assyrians back over in this area, and the Babylonians as well. But all of these figure into God's people. And God had control of the whole situation, but he was not forcing anybody to do anything he didn't want to. And sometimes we look at that, well, how could God cause this to happen to a good people? Well, you got to remember, folks, good is determined by God, not by us. And God has told us the things that we need to know, and he's told us the consequences of maybe taking a different route. He says, it's my way, folks. That's the people I want. He's given every one of us a capability of doing his will and receiving the reward that he's talked about. But you know, that promise started back before Abraham ever got to Shechem. God already had it in mind, and we think about, well, how far back was that? That was almost 4,000 years ago. But God already knew what he was going to do down here in this part of the country. He was going to establish his kingdom right there in that city. It says, I have chosen it. God knows what he wants. God has told us what he wants. God has given us example after example after example of what he does want and what he doesn't want. And the things that we've been studying are dealing with just those things. Solomon forsook God. That's the very first place I want to start. Solomon forsook God. And he did it against God's will. God had told people, he had forbidden his people to marry people from a lot of these places around him and a lot of these people that are around him. I've got my map gone. But the people that really took the children of Israel off course would, well, actually it started here with Solomon and his empire. But we're looking at Chemosh, which is the god of the Moabites. We're looking at Milcom, another god or goddess of the Moabites. And Molech, a goddess or god of Ammonites. And Molech was one of the worst. And you can see it from God's reaction to it. But under the Molech, under that doctrine or God, if people were having a bad time, they might offer their latest child. Put him through the fire and expect that to cause Molech to look at them more favorably. And I'm not going to try to go into what each of these gods specialized in, but Molech was one that was extraordinarily heinous. He was terrible. What they would do, apparently, was build a big bronze statue of a god holding his arms out, something like that, and the capability inside that statue to have a roaring fire. They would put the babies on the arms of the statue, and they'd die there. God didn't look like, he didn't like that. And for reasons like that, he married wives from the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Zidonians, and the Hittites, plus others. 700 of them, and 300 concubines. And I don't know the difference between a concubine and a wife. And I guess I'd just say that a wife was legal, and a concubine was semi-legal, or maybe even less than that. But the point is, Solomon let his lust for power. And in almost all of these cases, Solomon would marry a woman in order to establish a good diplomatic relation between the woman's people and him. So he used those wives and the taking of those wives, he used that as a political pawn to establish the kingdom or to maintain the kingdom which David had turned over to him. David got it all honestly. He just went in and killed them until they couldn't go any further. And that seemed to suit God. David was not concerned. He was not condemned on the basis of his warfare. He was doing what God wanted done. He wanted the people out of that land, the bad ones. He wanted them out. He wanted them out of the picture. But here is Solomon using those very people and diplomatic relationships with each of them to obtain, to keep the country that David had given him. When we get to the part about Solomon's rejection, and that basically got us to the point we want to look at a little further before we get through today. Solomon was rejected because he had followed the wives that God had warned him against. He married those wives, and the scripture says that he offered incense with his wives on those altars. And the very fact that he would build the altars and provide the place for these wives to conduct this idolatrous worship was in itself a condemnation of Solomon. And I think if we look at a lot of these things, we find out that, hey, we can get a lot of information about what God wants by the way he reacted to these people. Solomon was condemned because of his idolatry. And his idolatry stemmed from his relationship to those wives who worshiped those idols that he now worshiped. When we go far forward from this, I'm going to finish today's lesson basically with a couple of statements. God rejected Solomon, and in that rejection, he told Solomon that the people, the country, the nation, was going to be propagated not for his sake, but for David's sake. David had been a man who did what God wanted. He committed a sin. He was punished for that sin. But still, David was described as a man after God's own heart. That's what God wanted. God knows we're imperfect. But he's given us an avenue where that imperfection can be rubbed away. But Solomon didn't do that. Solomon did what God had told him not to do. And God told him no less than three times in the record that we have that it was all over if he didn't do what he wanted. Well, we go on, and when we get to the end of Solomon's life, and the time where the people are going to be turned over to another man to rule, we find that Solomon had a son who would be getting the kingdom. That son, if I'm not mistaken, was a son of I think she was Ammonite. I'll look that up. But anyway, Solomon had married a woman who was an Ammonitist, and she produced a son that is now going to take over the kingdom. Well, it's not a good signal, because the things that going to happen, and we'll see them as we go through this scriptures, and I hope you're reading in 1 Kings and Chronicles as well. But when Solomon died, his son, Rehoboam, as we talked a little bit last week, is going to take over the kingdom. There has been, at God's instigation, there has been three adversaries that God has basically stimulated as opponents to Rehoboam. And one of these is not an outsider. Two of them are. The one that is not an outsider is from the tribe of I'm losing my thought. It was from Joseph's tribe, and it was Manasseh. It was Ephraim that I'm trying to get out. The adversary that was brought up was Jeroboam. He was an Ephraimite. And he had been designated by Solomon as the ruler over all of the people of Joseph. That would have been primarily the Ephraimites, but also those from Manasseh. He was basically Solomon's emissary or whatever you want to call it, with those people, those parts of the tribe. Okay? When Solomon was at the end of his term, so to speak, this kingdom was going to be split, and the nature of the split was advertised by God by giving it to a prophet to give to Jeroboam. Jeroboam knew that he was getting the kingdom when Solomon died. But Jeroboam figured out that, hey, it's not too good. Solomon was out to kill him because Solomon had gotten that word too. He knew that he was a replacement was coming in. And Jeroboam kind of wanted to encourage it. But before Solomon died, he had it in his mind to kill Jeroboam, which forced Jeroboam to flee to Egypt, where he was until after Solomon died. After Solomon died, Rehoboam made an attempt to keep the kingdom together. But there was so much objection by the people that it was not possible. God forbade a war between Judah and Israel, which was imminent because Rehoboam wanted to keep the kingdom together in spite of what God had said, that it was going to be split. But Judah, under Rehoboam, wanted to bring the kingdom back together forcefully. But God stopped that through a prophet. He sent the word through a prophet that was not to happen. It was his doings, and it was not going to be stopped. Okay? So, as we go ahead talking about Jeroboam, the guy that got the 10 tribes, he began to set up his empire based in Shechem. And he saw one basic thing that was going to cause him problems, and that one basic thing was the people were going to want to go back to Jerusalem because that's where worship was supposed to take place. One of the things that is kind of a condemnation to Solomon, he worshiped in high places on occasion. And God didn't like that kind of a rebellion against him. And I see I'm through for tonight, and I'll start again Wednesday night. Thank you all.